Stefan, it's great to see you today. Thanks for joining.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks, Ben. Good to be here.
Well, I'm excited for this episode because you're the master of something that's very important to a lot of CEOs and brands today, which is Amazon. A lot of people are trying to get omnichannel. That obviously means Amazon. You have an incredible experience having worked at Amazon and building a lot of the tools that brands are using today. So I know it'll be fun to dive into that. But even before that, I noticed in your LinkedIn, you have this deep, rich history in supply chain. So you've kind of been in the guts of e-com from the very beginning. It would be great to start with a little bit of your background and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. You know, you don't always know. I talk to students in colleges and they get super worried and, you know, where am I going to go? What's my job? And, you know, sometimes like, well, just keep pursuing. So I had studied German along with marketing, but I knew I didn't want to do sales. And I had this choice of, I was very fortunate. I had the opportunity to go to Accenture or go be a sales rep for a German company that sold semi-truck seats. So I went to Accenture. And what I didn't realize about myself at the time, but I just like learning, right? I like learning and I like transformation. Like, how do we do it a different way? So at Accenture, I got to be part of a team early on in the late 90s. We were connecting a mainframe computer to the internet with COBOL. And it's like, hey, that's hard. Oh, well, okay, let's try it, right? Let's try it. So, you know, I had the opportunity, you know, I'd been doing supply chain with Harley Davidson and overseas in Germany with a couple German companies and just learning, right? How do we move material around? And the opportunity, because of some people I met early on at Accenture, to interview at Amazon. And I'm like, wow, Amazon gets a book to your door. That's amazing. But one of the things I also found too, and like all of us, like invention is messy and you get to a place that seems to be awesome. You're like, holy cow, how does this even work? There's so much duct tape and bubble gum making this happen. And so Amazon's growth was great. 2003, we got to transform, and I love that transformation. And just to fast forward, we're at this time in brands where, you know, 2010, 2011, I got to be part of Amazon's third party marketplace, and they grew to 1 million, 2 million sellers. But then all of a sudden there was this brand surge, and I could put a brand on Amazon. And then like, hey, Shopify is a good place to start a brand. And so we're at this transformation space where it used to be, if I wanted to start a new brand or new product line, I needed to get shelf space. Shelf space was the way I got it. You know, that's how I launched my brand. Now we're launching a brand with a Shopify store and Instagram or in TikTok, right? Because that's where customers are, where eyeballs are. So, you know, now as part of Foundry, you know, we are building a portfolio company of brands born online. And so, whereas just like books, when I started Amazon,
yeah,
the majority of them were physical stores. Now we're working on brands where the majority of them used to start by physical distribution. And now we start by physical. Now we start with online. We build brands online to get connected to customers. So I'm still in that transformation business. Like, let's go invent and be curious.
And you're doing some consulting as well, right? For brands.
Yeah.
So
you know, you don't know, and you know, I after leaving Amazon, you realize at first you're like, can I be successful anywhere? And then people are like, tell us, what's it like to be at Amazon? Can we be like Amazon?
Okay.
And so some of it is like, hey, there are some things that I can use and some people I've met. So sometimes, when there's opportunity, I work with a select number of clients. So I guess I call that a boutique. With myself and then some other former Amazon people, former Microsoft people, to help companies scale, help companies come up with a new path of innovation, or you know, anytime they're in a scale growing point. You know, one of the things we learned at Amazon is obviously be how to listen to customers online. How do you get customer signals when you're operating online? How to grow really fast, right? We went from, in my marketplace days, we went from a team of hundreds to a team of thousands. So how do you hire? How do you organize those people? How do you start setting goals and still drive innovation, right? We launched a mobile app. We launched a bunch of APIs. We launched a bunch of seller business tools. So how do you both hire those people, scale and grow. And so teaching and working with clients to help them better serve customers and build teams and organize them, and then deliver and execute on an innovation goal, is I've been able to do that with a number of clients now, both myself and then partnering with other associates in my consulting business.
Nice. That's great. Well, thanks for that background. That's really fun and gives us some good launching points for diving in. Going back to Amazon, because there's so much interest in that. At a high level, like what do you think are the right fits for Amazon in terms of brands? You know, let's say you're a Shopify or a D2C, brand that's now trying to explore the world of Amazon. Like, who makes for a good fit? You know, in terms of the types of things you're selling, the types of companies, the types of people you find success.
Yeah. Well, if you're you make a product, right? One of the first questions is, do customers search for that product? Do they search on Amazon today for it? Right. So I was working with one friend, he's starting a holster business. And at the time he was launching a few years back, we started, do people shop for that product today on Amazon? And the answer was no, right? There were very few search terms. There was none of his, what he considered competitors. And so, his path was to build a brand first, and build it on Instagram, build it on Shopify, say, really, I'm going to go acquire customers. Now, so that's one of the first things. There's lots of tools to say, what are customers searching for on Amazon? Are they searching for my kind of products? Are they searching for my brand? Fast forward a couple of years, and all of a sudden, he's got a pretty good business on Shopify, and we go back and do that same analysis. Are customers looking for your brand? Are they looking for similar products on Amazon? Sure enough, yes, right? His success on one channel had resulted in customers starting to search on Amazon. And so we had to think, how do we want to use Amazon? Do we want to use it as a sales channel? Do we want to use a marketing channel? Do we want to use it as a distribution? How did we want to think about it? But it was not, do we use Amazon or not? It was a, how do we use Amazon? So things are a great fit on Amazon, I think, when they're, the core strengths of Amazon. You have, in the US, you have a lot of customer eyeballs, but it's not like everybody looks at everything. So you want to look at what's my search and traffic around my kinds of products, or on Amazon, you call it a browse note. In my saying, so do they look, is my product something that people can easily get everywhere? Or, there's big towns, but after COVID, a lot of people have moved to more rural places. So is my selection going to be available? If you can meet those two tests, that's a good place to start. And then, start to look, can I efficiently operate on Amazon? Right. So also, when you're starting on Amazon, you're going to invest in inventory and it's going to sit in Amazon. You have to give it time because you got to ship to Amazon. There's going to be Amazon receive time. So some of your operating capital is going to, it's going to be a different efficiency. So that's another consideration. Are customers looking for your product? Is it something that is going to be regional or really broad? And then is it an efficient use of working capital within the Amazon model? Right? Or do you need to change your processes to do that?
And how would you recommend customers or leaders think about repeat purchase? So let's say that you had a business that, I don't know, maybe you buy multiple holsters. I'm sure people do. But if you had a business,
we like him, you give him his gifts.
Right. that's maybe more consumable, or they're focused on repeat purchase. Like, how should they think about Amazon, in light of that? Is that not a consideration?
Well, there's two things about Amazon versus your own site versus Shopify, right? And with Foundry, we operate a couple of our own brands, right? One of those is Brute Magnetics, a magnetic fishing company. We've got brutemagnetics.com, right? Or we have technorv.com. And what we find is there's different shoppers on both, right? One common pattern I see is that enthusiasts and people who really want to engage with the topic, right? I love concealment. I want to go to tentacore.com and see what content Jeff's put out there. Or I'm really getting into magnet fishing, right? Or I'm a Makita guy, right?
Right.
Those enthusiasts don't necessarily go to Amazon, or they go to, when they know exactly what they want, they go to Amazon. But when they want to engage in the brand, they might go to the direct to the site. A first-time user, customer acquisition, someone who's just exploring, they trust Amazon, they know they can get Prime delivery, and so they come to Amazon. So understanding customers may shop your sites differently and why it can be good to be omnichannel, but also think about your content strategy. And then customers who are dedicated Amazon customers, you can get some hints on repeat purchases. If Amazon's suggesting to you as a seller that you should invest in Subscribe and Save, that's a hint to you that customers are doing repeated buys, right?
Yeah.
You think about AOV differently. So you might buy a belt and a holster and a mag carrier, or you might buy a magnetic fishing kit and a grappling hook and an extra rope, right?
Right.
So to your question, running repeat, identifying the opportunity for repeat purchases is different on Amazon, and you have to look for signals. Because it's not as easy as a Shopify site where you just run a standard LTV report and be good to go. But there are signals there if you know how to look for them. And then also thinking not just about repeat purchase the item, but really how are you driving repeat purchase within your brand?
Right? Okay.
How do I drive those accessory sales? Or how do I drive the... and then you can start to look at, you know, I describe running a business on Amazon sometimes is, you know, sailing a small boat in a big lake.
Okay.
So in sailing, part of it is you pay attention to the winds, pay attention to competitors. Well, pay attention to the data on Amazon, pay attention to what are the algorithms doing. And you have to learn how to read them. Unless you're like me, you got to work and you know how those algorithms work.
Right.
You learn how to read them.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that's a little foreign for a lot of people that grew up in the D2C world, right? I mean, they kind of have their set of how you build that business, how you run that business, the tools and the people. What are the right, how do people think about that? Do they need a different type of person? Or what skill sets do those people need to be successful on Amazon? And also then let's talk about tools that might be unique to the platform.
Yeah. You know, first, yeah, I think all the entrepreneurs I've had the chance to meet who've built a business on Shopify or built a business on Amazon, fantastic. You know, I grew up in small business, high school, worked in small business, but I do notice some differences. So on Shopify, you have access to a lot of data, you know what the data is, and you can build some fairly calm reports. You know, Bainbridge Growth, you know, has a lot of great education. And as your business grows, you start to move into how do I manage working capital? Is my business growing? You know, a lot of people start with, I just want to sell stuff. And so if the revenue number is growing, everything's great. And then they start to go, oh, what's my repeat purchase? Am I using working capital efficiency? Because they start to go, wait, profitability and margin. The way you get to that on Amazon, you use a different set of reports, right? And so it's like learning two different languages. You can't just carry over. You're still trying to optimize for revenue growth, profitability growth, and LTV. But you're thinking about, you know, the ratio of your ad spend on Amazon will be different for PPC versus SEO and Google AdWords versus, you know, Amazon or sponsor brands. And sometimes it's a little more trial and error. The kind of things, if you're thinking, okay, I have a great D2C business. It's been running well, whatever platform, Shopify, BigCommerce, whatever. And now I think I want to start selling my products on Amazon.
Right.
Get ready for a little bit of trial and error, right? Yeah. That's something new for you. You're an expert here, but you're not an expert there. And then, you know, I think there's some great resources in the community. You know, you want to be careful because it's easy to quickly pick up a lot of agencies. And then you're like, wait a second, I didn't learn anything. And those costs just ate everything. There's no opportunity here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great agencies out there and you may want to selectively use them, but there's also a lot of great resources to study. Stephen Pope, just pushes a lot of content out. His business is called My Amazon Guy, right? I got an Amazon guy.
Yeah.
And there are virtual assistants. So one of the things you want to think about as you go onto Amazon is I need to learn. I need to learn about how do I gain traffic? So I need to learn about PPC and efficient PPC spend. How do I learn? Some people learn by webinars and podcasts. Other people learn by just trial. Set yourself a budget and do it. Some people learn from teachers. And so some great folks like Stephen Pope or Brian Johnson out there on PPC. You're going to have to learn PPC. Another thing you have to learn is just, you know, how to read Amazon on terms of the data that they're giving you. And again, same three things. There's some great, you know, podcasts or some people like myself or, you know, some of these other folks who will publish or will gladly, you know, give you an assessment. And then you just try it.
Yeah. I was fascinated when you were showing us the Seller Central tools, the, you know, it was the combination of like tools and then your knowledge of what those tools were trying to communicate or how to get the right data out of it. And obviously you have the, you know, the benefit of like having built a lot of those tools. And experience. But how does somebody get up that curve, you know, in learning a new system, and how long does it take? I mean, you know, like how long should people expect it takes them to become really proficient at Amazon?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for everybody, it's going to be, you know, a little bit different. We all learn at different rates, so it's not a great answer. But, you know, just to go back for a minute, in 2009, which wasn't that long ago, you logged into the Seller Central tool set. The Seller Central is the B2B portal, sellercentral.amazon.com. It's the B2B tools portal to do everything to run your business on Amazon, right? And so one of the things, again, just to go back to your last question, you know, when you run your own, you know, Shopify store, your own D2C store, you're trying to get people to your store and it's your store. You own the whole thing. And so, you know, really getting people there, but then the operations within the store, you own it. When you run on Amazon, you're on a shelf in a mall or on a rack in a mall, right? Mm-hmm. And so I may be DeWalt and I'm in multiple places inside of Home Depot, right? I'm not even in my own store or my own storefront. And so that mindset is helpful to understand, do I stand out on the shelf, right? Customers, when they shop, they're looking at my product, but all of us, you can learn this, like we all probably compare two or three items. Or when we look at search results, that's like the shelf. And so the operations are a little bit different. You're not just running a store, you're running a brand within somebody else's store and it's somebody else's customers, right? So that changes what you have to learn. In Seller Central 2009, like to do a return to a seller was an email. Right. When you shop on Amazon and you, I want to send this mug back, right?
Yeah.
Well, please email the seller.
Yeah.
Right. So in 10 years, Amazon really, and they talk about this, they invested, you know, tens of thousands of engineering hours to be able to say, all right, let's make sure that every seller who's on Amazon has the floor is basic tooling to run their business with a set of recommendations and not just data, but actually interpreted data and recommendations. So all across Seller Central, it's not intended to be the best tools, but it's to be basic tools, help you with automation. And as your business grows, you may choose to use more advanced tools in the Amazon ecosystem. And even in Seller Central, there's a directory of other tools with ratings and reviews. So you're like, oh, I don't have that many products. I'm going to use Amazon's automated pricing tool. And then, you know, competition's heating up and I think I might have some pricing opportunity. I'm going to switch from Amazon to a third party tool, maybe Prophecy from Chad Rubin, because it will have more advanced functionality. So to answer your question, how much time, how long do you give yourself to learn Amazon? Learn it by sashimi. Once, either figure out your slice and just get really good at optimizing it. So maybe take four of your products or one slice of your brand and say, okay, can I get really good? Can I be competitive? Do I know how to get traffic, right? If you're doing it yourself,
right.
You know, borrow some people. There's some great virtual assistants around the world and say, okay, I'm going to borrow an expert on PPC and I'm going to use them for 3 months or I'm going to use them for 6 weeks. But you should be good. You should start getting a sense of running your Amazon business within weeks or short amount of months.
Okay.
And the big factor here is, are you a product that people tend to think Amazon is one river, and so all these customers are coming. So if I just throw my product in the river, lots of customers will see it. And a better way to think about Amazon is a watershed where there's lots of streams that flow down to a river. Okay. And your product line may be kind of niche-y, and it's in a small stream of a watershed. And that's an Amazon tip, by the way. So we were looking at a report in Seller Central that tells you your conversion rate for the cat, and it tells you the benchmark of the category conversion rate that you're in. Well, Brute Magnetics, is it in the industrial supplies category? Because it's a construction supply and it's a magnet, and so we're using it to clean up metal around a job site, or maybe you're using it as a scrapyard, or is it outdoor recreation? Well, right. Those two browse nodes, those rivulets in the Amazon watershed, have a very different level of traffic and have a very different conversion rate.
Yeah.
So that's your pro tip. Well, when you start understanding that tip, you're starting to optimize your Amazon business, right? That's a good 6 months in, or you found a really good mentor or found a really good kind of expert to learn from.
Yeah.
Because you start with the, I have a product, are customers looking at my product? How do I get more customers? Okay.
Right.
And then you go to, okay, there's organic traffic and paid traffic. And then you start to work yourself through that. And then you go, okay, I'm paying too much for traffic. How do I get more traffic at a more cost efficient rate? And so you walk this ladder of learning.
Do you think, certainly at the experimental stage, and you weren't expecting a lot of sales, you wouldn't hire somebody specifically for Amazon. But, at what point do you need to hire a person to run your Amazon business? Or do you? Maybe that's a false assumption.
I've seen three approaches to people hiring to run their Amazon business. One is they recognize they want to learn fast, and they have a successful D2C site, but they recognize that Amazon has 65% of 3P dollars in the United States, and they want to sell their products everywhere customers are, right? Yeah. So back to my holster guy, he said, hey, I want to make sure people are shopping, they find my product. And they see my video content, right? And so, maybe we sell on Amazon. Maybe we just make sure people find my product and learn about my product on Amazon. One pattern is, hire someone who's hire an agency or hire a virtual assistant just to manage my traffic.
Okay. Right?
Because I don't want to spend the time to learn about traffic because I'm really running my D2C business. So I'm going to hire a specialist to give me a fast forward, right, on making sure that my products look good on Amazon, and I don't know all the buttons to push and files to upload. So I'm going to hire a specialist to get set up and get a fast forward. That's one pattern, because I'm still running my D2C business, and my as an operator, I'm going to keep my main attention there, right?
Okay.
And then at the point that you now have and you decide like, hey, there's enough business on Amazon to warrant a full, it's the same decision you'd make in any part of, do I need someone to run, my business? Do I need someone to run shipping? Well, there's enough orders going out every day that someone should just have that as a job, right? So in this case, you're not hiring knowledge as much as just there's enough work, right? Somebody's got to ship the products into Amazon fulfillment by Amazon. And I want them to really pay attention and report to me. So that's a second pattern, is people great, go, awesome, I'm all in.
Yeah.
And then the third pattern is, again, at scale, they may replace those virtual assistants, or they may replace the specialist with an agency, because now they're like, how do I go the next step function? The business is running on Amazon, but I know that Amazon's fees are complicated, and Amazon's probably accidentally overcharging me, or they're not, the accuracy's not quite right. Now I need somebody like Gedita or Riverbank Consulting. Or one of the patterns I see in sellers is they start out, nobody's selling a product like them, and they get customers, and they get attention. And they forget that sellers watch for what customers are paying attention to and copy you, right? Mm-hmm. And they may copy you legitimately or illegitimately, different problem. But they're going to copy something like you. Now when people search for concealment holsters, instead of seeing just my brand and the brand I've worked so hard to build, people are like, hey, that's what customers are shopping for. I'm going to sell that too.
Right.
And now they see five things and the prices start to compress, mm-hmm. right? And you're like, I need to do something. So Anchor was super smart. Anchor watched that and they would add a feature to the product, right? So they'd be able to keep their price because they gave you a little more, right? Yeah. Instead of two USB ports, they gave you three, right? Yeah. And so their product had more features for just a little bit higher price, right? And but they would watch and then people would copy that. And so they'd add another feature. Or you have to find efficiencies in your business. Pay attention to these great reports from Bainbridge to say, hey, we can save some costs here, or yeah. we can proactively identify mix shift.
Yeah.
And so that's the first thing, you know, the first hurdle that I see with successful sellers on Amazon is when people start copying you, how do you deal with price compression?
Yeah.
The second one is on Amazon is, you know, things can run for a while, but you know, mason jars are still mason jars.
Right.
Thermoses are still thermoses. But a lot of products, they really want to see a new product, right? Yeah. If you have a brand, I want to see a new product.
Yeah.
And sellers can find it a challenge to keep up the new product velocity while their business is also scaling.
Yeah.
And that's a challenge I see some sellers face. They get good at managing their growth and they're not launching new products to keep driving that growth.
So the downside of not launching new products enough is it's easier to copy and you just get into a more of a commodity? Or are you saying that the buyers, the consumers are looking for new things and you're not delivering it, but your competitor?
Why do people buy new cars, right? And they want a little more feature. They want more feature for the money. Some things just wear out and you could sell them the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. So it could just be new models, right? But it can be a challenge for a small, medium business where they're like, man, my business is growing 20%. So I had to put new shelving in the back. I hired a person and we put some new systems in to manage our pricing. So we're more competitive. And then all of a sudden somebody launches a slightly better mousetrap and they're like, my manufacturer can't copy that.
Yeah.
Right. Or my manufacturer, you know, sometimes it's just product evolution.
Yeah.
I've got a bunch of kids, as you know. And so I've bought a lot of little scooters, micro scooters, Razor scooters. And first they just had the wheels. And then they started having flashing lights in the wheels, right? And then they came in a variety of different colors.
Yeah.
And so sometimes new product development doesn't have to be like a massive expansion. It's just the evolution of the product line.
What are some common mistakes that you see brands making, you know, regardless of stage, you know, so even people that are experienced or just starting out?
Well, those two patterns that I mentioned are first, like if you're trying to delight customers, you do want to keep evolving your product. Mm-hmm. And if you have been successful on Amazon, you are also dealing with the problem of blessing. You're dealing with growth, right? Yeah. Champagne problem. So that's one. Understanding that you're operating in someone else's store. So there's going to be copycats, including Amazon, right? Because Amazon's trying to delight customers. That's what they're trying to reward and that's what they're trying to do. I think the third is a common pattern, whether it's a mistake or whether it's a success pattern, is understanding how to keep getting better at working on Amazon and how to read Amazon. So, I mean, that topic of Amazon copied my product, right? Amazon's the big bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of software and a lot of systems at Amazon. And so there's not necessarily motive. Not saying the table's flat, but it is their store, right? But, there's not necessarily motive. And Amazon's still got plenty of improvements. And people can get hung up in this kind of eddy wheel of Amazon's not fair. How do I be successful? It's kind of like the officials in a football game. Just play better and leave no doubt, right? Do what you can, play better and leave no doubt. But that specifically means Amazon will launch a bunch of features and you should try them all and see if they work for you. And know you can study Amazon. If the feature works, Amazon will keep it. If the feature doesn't work, Amazon will kill it. Sometimes they kill it fast. Remember Payphrase?
No.
Right. Amazon launched Payphrase. I think it was like 2006, 2007. It was this crazy idea that if you give people, let people make their own phrase, they can pay with it. It didn't stick. Amazon killed it. And now here 15 years later, we have Venmo and the Cash App. And we're paying each other by phrases, right? Yeah. So sometimes Amazon's before its time. But also, you sometimes also being an early adopter. So Amazon launched Merch by Amazon, right? It was a cafe press kind of thing. You could come up with designs and upload them. By getting an account fast, like I'm going to try everything that Amazon does. It's a good thing because it was very successful. And Amazon said, sorry, we're not taking any more accounts. We'll be doing it by invite only. Wow. And so people were like, sweet, I'm signing up. I'll try everything Amazon does.
Yeah.
Great. So that's one thing about understanding Amazon. Try everything they launch.
Yeah.
But recognize they don't always know. They're guessing.
Right.
Second thing, recognize Amazon's going to keep changing. So that's why it's more like sailing. You can't go, this is the way, and it will always be this way. It's, no, Amazon's going to change the search algorithm a little bit. They're going to change policies on marketing. And they're doing it not to mess with you. They're doing it because they're going to continuous improve to try to delight customers. And so you're going to have to keep adapting your process because the bar is going to keep going up.
Right.
And so people think they can get to a process that sellers think or businesses think they can get to a process on their side and just be done.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you're going to have to keep investing in your Amazon improvements. And that's probably different than your D2C a little bit.
Yeah. Right?
Amazon will start with like, hey, 2-day shipping is the standard.
Yeah.
Except for me, I live in rural America, so it's not always 2-day. But
right.
And then all of a sudden, when I lived in Seattle, man, 2-hour shipping was the standard. Right? And sellers are like, I can copy 2-day. Yeah. And then like, holy crud, I have no idea how I'm going to copy 2-hour shipping.
2 hours, yeah. Well, that's one area that you hear a lot of people struggling with is the changes in inventory, rules about how much you have to have available or you can't store too much. Like, what are some tips or thoughts there for managing that better?
Yeah, that's a great example of sometimes Amazon's a little obtuse. When I was in charge of Seller Central, some of the feedback I would get from experienced sellers was like, sometimes when I'm communicating with you or via seller support, not me personally, or when I'm trying to use your tools and look at the data on Seller Central, I feel like I'm talking to a small child in a different language. I think you're trying to tell me something important and I just can't tell what. I think from a inventory score can be a little bit like that, right? It's got a code name, IPI. The inventory performance index, and it's a synthetic metric. So take my advice, what's Amazon trying to do, right? Amazon's trying to follow the pattern of more of what you subsidize and less of what you penalize. So they want to subsidize turns. They want to subsidize a low return rate. They want to subsidize, you having efficient use of the space they're charging you for. And so I can only put in there what I can put in there. So you have to think about your mix, right? I'm not putting one product in. If I have a brand, I'm putting my brand in. And so maybe I put my best sellers in for a little while to see if I can boost my index, right? And get more index. And then I balance my best sellers and new products, right? And so I think about my mix to use inventory. Maybe I use some seller fulfilled prime, or I use a lightning deal, right? Because at the end of the day, Amazon's going to reward things that sell. Best way to get more search rank? Sell stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yes, you can buy your way up to the top or sell stuff. So sometimes investing in Prime Day or investing in a coupon or investing in a lightning deal can give you residual value of your brand. And that works back to IPI. That's a great example. Wow. I think one of the interesting things that's going to play out, right, as a brand is buy with Prime, right? Because that's clearly a shot across the bow on, how's that work with Shopify? How's Shopify going to react? Is it something you should just try? Probably. Should you try it on all your brands? Don't know, right? It's early days, but Amazon's clearly putting a lot of momentum behind it.
Well, go a little deeper on buying with Prime. Like, when would you try it and when wouldn't you? And what do you think, it could go, where do you think it could go for Amazon?
Yeah, Prime's a great experience, right? I've been a Prime customer for a long time, right? I think you're a Prime customer. A lot of people are Prime customers. And so one of the things I've loved about Shopify is when I go from one Shopify site to another Shopify site and they recognize me, they're like, hey, here's your code. Use that shared wallet. Shopify was kind of there first. And Amazon is doing something similar. So if you're starting, if you have a pretty solid D2C site, maybe you have two for different sub-brands or for whatever reason, and you're just getting started on Amazon, that's a way to say, hey, because Amazon's going to look at the data, right? They're going to look at, did people buy? It also means, can help you get some of that inventory space because Amazon's going to reward your turns, right? And you're selling on multiple channels.
Yeah.
There are different cost structures, right? So your working capital and how the cost structure of your own site versus Amazon site, you may want to decide, which is actually going to make you more money, right? Is the lift going to be worth any extra costs? Is it going to create Amazon customers and move people to Amazon, move people? So dynamics that I don't think we know yet, but you're going to want to monitor as you try. All right. So you might try a subset of your products or a subset of your brand before you just roll it out across your whole site. And it's a good way to potentially get started on Amazon, right? If you're not already there.
Do you think that this is like a Shopify killer, or you wouldn't go that far?
Shopify has been going for a long time to, that's like good news, right? It's like, hey, it's conflict. It's a prediction. Shopify's put a lot of time in, and they've hit niches that Amazon hasn't achieved. Like, it's easier to build a site. It's easier as a brand to communicate with your customers. Amazon's still evolving on how do they help brands actually represent themselves with videos and content. Mm. And maybe they feel a little behind there, but I tried. I'm not sure I got as far as I would have liked in building brand tools, the same way you communicate in TikTok and Instagram. And anyway, Shopify, you can put that content more easily. And Shopify's tried to build some delivery network for some time, and they haven't hit it yet, right? Yeah. So I'm not ready to go. It's a Shopify killer, but I it may kill delivery within Shopify because it does add a headwind there.
Yeah. Hey, so we have a few minutes left. Tell me more about Foundry and what the types of brands that you guys are looking to acquire or build, and who might be good fits.
What a fun time to be in an aggregator. It was 2020. I mean, it's been a fun ride. It's kind of like COVID. 2020, Thrasio comes out, and all of a sudden we go from having 7 aggregators to 97 aggregators. Foundry is always intended to be a little bit different. We're pretty heavy operations. Obviously, I played a lot in Seller Central. My peers and employees at Foundry we certainly have finance guys and acquisition guys, but our CEO Helen Vade led a lot of stuff at Yum Brands and Walmart. Kyle Walker and Matt Rhodes, and we've been people who work with brands, and we know what Q4 ship cutoff means. We know what running a brand on Amazon and Shopify on the operation side. And in this environment, with supply chain being difficult, that's been a big deal for Foundry, right? And we've always, second thing is we really love the entrepreneurs. And so we want to be connected with our founders post-acquisition. We see the acquisition as the beginning of a relationship. We look to, re-engage and redirect them to give them, let them do more of what they love. So if it's launching more new products, both in their brand that we just bought or other brands, we love that, right? Or if it's just communicating with customers, we've bought their company. So, it will probably be we'll redirect somewhere, but it could be working with other founders to help them exit, right? So that second thing we love our founders. And then, also with Foundry, we've been in verticals. So we love pets, we love personal care. We recently bought a company called Supply and Razors and men's personal care, outdoor recreation like Brute, or some RV companies like Levelmate. So we like these verticals, and because it lets us build, do we want to buy an ASIN? Do we want to buy a whole brand? It gives us more flexibility there. So Foundry has, we're thrilled. We're still buying. We're still hiring, but we continue to be selective to buy brands that have strong EBITDA, strong growth rate, and that's limiting the pool a little bit because it's been harder. But we want to buy companies with momentum that are of a certain size. And then we look, if they're on one channel, we bring them omni-channel. We accelerate their product development. We start to look to bring them to more customers either through markets. Sometimes we do physical stores. So we've done a few partnerships to bring our brands into physical stores because we have that experience in those relationships. So we're still looking for a few good brands, and particularly in those verticals.
Yeah. And what's the minimum revenue or EBITDA?
We like to see, brands that are a million plus or at least around a million in EBITDA with the momentum. Typically, now sometimes we'll see a smaller company that has some great products in our verticals that we can either merge to our existing brand or we can, bring in as a product line. But typically we're looking for things a little bigger because the floor of operating costs on Amazon, there's a floor. And what we do also at Foundry is we've been pretty good. We have a shared supply chain team. So all our brands get integrated into the supply chain team. All our brands get integrated into our shared services marketing team. And so, we're basically building an agency and an incubator at Foundry to operate parts of our brands or operate our brands. And that's been, doing it all in a year.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then just to finish up, I'm sure there's a lot of people that have been impressed with you and would love to reach out and learn more about the services you offer in consulting. How do they find you? Who are good fits? Who shouldn't reach out? Who should reach out?
Oh, sure. So very accessible on LinkedIn. It's easy way to get a hold of me, Stefan Haney on LinkedIn. Emails is Stefan@vantageleader.com. My name's in there because I've got the German spelling of my name. I look to work either directly with executives or with leaders at a company who are growing their business or want to expand their business. I spend a lot of time, as Amazon grew fast, right? I've always said, as your business doubles or as your team doubles, it's probably time to take a look at your processes or your people and do an audit, right? And say, are you scaling? And that's one area that I've either built teams. When people are transitioning to something new, and I've done it before, either I work directly with them on an engagement or advisory, or I build a small team of people to help show them. Because you learn a lot by showing or doing alongside people as much or more than telling people. Yeah. So taking people through that journey of a strategic plan, a growth plan, an annual plan, or how do we launch this new innovation, define and launch a new innovation project is something I do quite a bit. And then usually for Amazon advising, I like to keep a nice boundary. I spend a lot of time with Foundry. So, but I, have a great set of people out there that I often refer people to. I'm looking to get started on Amazon. Who can I talk to if it's you? And I have a number of people that I can help guide there.
Oh, nice. So people should reach out for that as well.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Stefan, this is great. Did I miss anything? Was there anything that you...
Well, Ben, we've covered a lot of ground. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having a podcast and here. I love Bainbridge Growth. I think a lot of things, and I didn't mention it earlier, but You know, sellers can get so hung up in the transactions and they need to learn where the profit is and where the costs are in this business. And you guys have built a great set of reports and a great set of guidance even to help people know what is going on in the business, but also, is it good? And so, you know, love the chance to talk with you and you know, see your products at work as well. So
thank you. Thanks. I appreciate that.